Okay, reading from the Jiva Dharma, Chapter 10, Nitya Dharma and Vaishnav history and histories. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nyaya Ratna, I don't care to discuss this subject any further. I can see that you will inevitably quote the harsh descriptions from the Shastra of the Brahmins of Kali Yuga. I feel greatly pained when I hear the particular statements from the Shastras, such as this one from the Varaha Purana, Rakshasa Kalam Asritya Jayante Brahma Yonishu. Taking reference to the age of Kali, demons are born in the families of Brahmins. Let's not pursue this topic any further. Now please tell me why you don't respect Sri Shankaracharya, who is a limitless ocean of knowledge. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Daksu Mulutam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kedamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Pancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Shindu Vayevicha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from Sri Vrindavan. I remember my parents were here in 1981 or 82. And then about 10 years later, you know, I called my mother on the phone. She said, how is my Vrindavan? It's an amazing place, although it's frightening how much traffic and so many things are covering at least the main roads coming in. I just don't touch that part of Vrindavan. I'm staying here in the MVT, which is beautiful gated community where perhaps only 10% of the land is buildings. And then when I go out not towards the main road, but the other way. That's the only place I ever go, except if I have to take a car to go to. And it's just a wonderful place, and I love staying in one place. You know, just giving class every day. I never advertised the class, but people close to me somehow or interested in what I have to say somehow find it. And just a little shastra and just basically trying to chant and hear all day. Mangal Arti here is very beautiful, the song Vibhavari Sesha, and just hearing all the names of Krishna that describes his pastimes in the morning. And partly due to the grace of Panchagoda Prabhu, this is just an excellent devotee and manager. He really empowers people. He just knows, I don't know, it's just a very well-managed place with just really good people. So in one sense, despite other areas become covered, the Krishna Balaram Mandir is really flourishing. The 24-hour kirtan, you know, more, and it just doesn't matter. Just So many people are becoming proficient in kirtan. That kirtan is rocking most of the day. The deity worship is extremely opulent. Beautiful flower decorations. And actually, India is a rich country. I mean, India just has so much money. And the ISKCON temples, they're just... I mean, they're the richest temples in ISKCON by far. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars come into them each month, I think. I mean, I think the Vrindavan temple probably makes $200,000 a month. I'm kind of against some things I heard, but of course they have a lot of expenses, but it's just flourishing. Just flourishing. And I like being around this temple. And I really love the devotees around here, too. And, of course, I've been here in one sense, except for one other person. I think I've been here the longest. Of course, I'm not staying here all the time now. And staying here a little bit longer this year, March 15th. That's great. Yeah, that's really great. Yeah, it's nice staying one place. Anyway, today is the disappearance day of my dear godmother's holiness, Tamal Krishna Maharaj. I should say something about that first. And there's different functions. One is that is samadhi. It's Pushpa Samadhi in Govardhan. Another is at his house on the Parikram Marg. And the one that I'm most going is I'm going to take lunch at his cook, who I know very well, Gopal Raj, who feels much separation. So he invited me over for lunch, and probably one of the best cooks in the world. Eating very simply here, but today I guess it'll be different. But I'll just tell one story about Tamal Krishna Maharaj that strikes me as there was a court case. You see, in Indian law, the son automatically inherits the assets of the father. The only exception is if the father took sannyas, even in Prabhupada's rooms and other things. The way they're keeping Prabhupada's rooms, it's just, I guess everything's done so finely. Of course, the room where he left, and he had a very beautiful house here, Prabhupada, on the property. And it's spotless, immaculate, it's just done so well. But they have his passport, you know, and Prabhupada, who's his father, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, family, none. His name, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, his sannyas name. So, although Prabhupada left some kind of trust for his family, not big, he was really sannyas. I mean, Prabhupada, that's no longer his family, that's all. But his oldest son sued for ISKCON, said it belongs to me. ISKCON belongs to me. And somehow the legal documents of Prabhupada's will were a little bit screwed up by the lawyer in Mathura. And it went to the court case went to trial in Bombay. And one of the chief witnesses for ISKCON was Narayan Maharaj, who had performed the sannyas ceremony. So he was very kind to come there, and for 1 month he sat in the courts. Very kind. For 1 month he sat in the courts to defend ISKCON. And, you know, their case was that Tamal Krishna Maharaj had somehow illegally usurped Prabhupada's, I don't know, something. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj was put on the he was put on the stand somehow regularly, and I mean, don't cross-examine Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He's one of the sharpest people in the world when it comes to practical intelligence, you know, and so Narayan Maharaj was watching Tamal Krishna Maharaj defend him. And then in the morning they were staying at the Radharasa Bihari temple. And every morning, Tamal Krishnamurti would spend most of his time in front of Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman deities. Now, Narayan Maharaj is a Rasika Bhakti. He's very much into Braj Bhakti. Even I'm reading in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu lately that the whole chapter, devotional service passes liberation. And then part of that is that the devotees of Krishna are higher than devotees elsewhere, and worship of Krishna is higher. That's part of our philosophy. So he really, and our Ishtadev is Krishna. It's not Ramachandra. We see Ramachandra as, oh, Krishna is dressing as a king. But, you know, that's our relationship is with Krishna. That's our Ishtadev. That's our Bhagavat Sarup Gyan. That's the understanding we got when we get initiated into the Sampradaya, connected with Prabhupada and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta and Rupa Goswami, that our form of God is Krishna, the most personal form of God. So he couldn't understand why Tamal Krishna Maharaj was meditating on. So Narayan Maharaj asked him, and he said, you know, you're a Gaudiya Vaishnava. Why are you spending all your time just meditating on Sita Ram and Lakshman Hanuman? And he said, I'm not meditating on Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman. He said, I'm not meditating on Ram. I'm meditating on his weapons, you know, to fight this court case. And then Narayan Maharaj was so impressed. And then he said it that he said, I learned Guru Nishtha from Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So it's so important, Guru Nishtha. And that's really the basis of our philosophy. That we really surrender to the will of God as represented in the Guru Parampara. By Srila Prabhupada and by those who represent him. I was going to make a point. Let me just see if I can remember it. That's a essential point. Guru Nishtha, yes. And I'm appreciating that simple point more and more. and how Prabhupada's instructions are so simple about the basic process of Krishna consciousness. How they're so simple about the basic process of Krishna consciousness. And I've seen there in the temple so many advanced souls, just very simple though. Not that they have to read so much Rasika literatures and all this. It's just very simple and basic, you know, that deep, deep surrender to Prabhupada and Prabhupada's mission. And recently, I had a little example of that, which was kind of enlivening for me, too, is, you know, I was in Mayapur, and I give Bhagavad Gita in the 10th canto every day. And just 1 second. Jai Sri Radhe? Yeah, come here 1 second. I just have to check one thing. I'll get right back to this. Okay, what's the plan with Tara today?
I'll go for Tara at 7:30.
Nice.
And she'll come here.
Okay, great.
Okay,
because I'm giving the class, so I'll start the puja a little bit later.
Okay.
So you'll just keep everything on it, including the... okay, that's it. That's it. You brought her prasadam?
Yes,
okay. What did you bring her?
It was dal, rice, carrots, and subjects.
She was happy?
Yes. She was happy with the support and care from the one she told about it.
Okay. She's nice. Okay. So do that. So I was in Mayapur, and I think I told the story already that one simple person was coming to my class, not dressed in a dhoti. His hair was, he didn't have a shaved head. And I thought he was a very new devotee. And then, you know, I found out he had come to Mayapur. He was a musician with Vishnu John from the very beginning. He was in this Marari band in Tennessee. And he kept coming to India for the first time in over 45 years as a devotee. And he died after 3 days in Mayapur. And before that, he was telling everybody how enlivened he was to hear Krishna Katha and come to my class. And so that was so nice. I was so busy in Mayapur, especially towards the end days, people to see, and it just, but I had found out from one very nice lady, older lady, who helps manage my Puri Yatra, and she, Aditi her name is, and she took the responsibility of the project of devotee care in Mayapur, which is huge. It's a huge community, and people are dying, and you know they require support, and it's like a lot of work, and it's just a lot of work in so many ways. I was surprised she was even surprised she could make her way to the Puri Yatra, which is really her spiritual life. But she told me that one of my godbrothers is very ill. And should I go visit him? And, you know, it was really crunch for time. I mean, really crunch for time. But I was really determined because I've had other instances where I didn't fit it in and then the person died and then I just felt so regretful. So I always make it a priority now. I don't want to make those mistakes again. And somehow or other he had some infection in his spine and he was hospitalized for 1 month in Calcutta. And then he came back, and he has his own house in Mayapur on the campus. And I went to visit him, you know, and they're very nice. They found a, you know, some devotee that cooks for me, cares for him. He was on his back. You know, he wasn't in pain anymore, but he was completely on his back, bedpan, the whole thing. And, you know, he's about 67, 68 maybe. Some of you may know his son, who was in New York for a while, named Rasacharya. And, you know, he was on his back, and he used to come to my classes. I invited him to Prashad last year, and, you know, I just kind of, when I left there, I remember having this distinct thing in my mind that, you know, these are the real heroes of the Krishna consciousness movement. You know, his whole life, he was completely dedicated to Prabhupada. He somehow or other managed always to stay basically in a temple or temple atmosphere. He was very talented as a, anyway, handyman things. He was a writer. I mean, he did a lot of things. But he always managed to stay. He helped build some of the theistic exhibitions in Delhi. You know, he'd go wherever there was service. And it's not easy. And, he always had a shaved head and, you know. He just, just always stayed faithful and never really got confused. He'd get angry sometimes when things weren't right. But he never got confused. He just was 100% dedicated to Srila Prabhupada. 100% dedicated. And what Gita Nagar here was telling me, many times he was writing on the Mayapur forum that even before he got sick, that he just wants to die in Mayapur. Then I got message that he left his body in Mayapur, at a time where, you know, everybody in the world is there, so it's a time where Krishna wants to recognize you if you leave at that time. And I just kind of thought, how glorious. So anyway, to all Krishna Maharaj and these devotees, I'm just appreciating more and more, you know, whatever the qualities, whatever our natures, we may be smart, not smart, a manager, not manager, do a lot, a prestigious service, not do a lot. That simple conviction that really internally changes one's identity is really the essence of spiritual life. And all glories to people like His Holiness, Kamal Krishna Maharaj, who was a very, very powerful, powerful person, who had a necessity to control his environment to a really extreme degree sometimes. It could be difficult being around him. But core within the heart, he was sincere and surrendered to Prabhupada. So we'll remember him today. Now, in terms of our story today, I'll explain a little bit about it. Thank you all. I'm determined to go through the Jiva Dharma. I know it's hard to remember from week to week. But now we're in the story of Harihara, who's a professor who was was a Vaishnava, but in the system of Panchaposhana, where it's just one of God, many gods you can worship, but the goal is basically impersonal. You don't worship Krishna as the absolute entity in itself, but as a means to achieve liberation. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, he preached against this to establish Ananya Bhakti, the exclusive worship of Krishna as the ultimate reality. And he also preached against casteism and demigod worship. Now, these are the bread and butter of the Brahmin class. And before that, before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they really exclusively ruled Bengal. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by his preaching, you know, promoted pure devotional service. So there was a backlash, and some of these Brahmins started to preach against Vaishnavism, saying that that worship of Krishna is not an eternal reality. It's historical. It's created by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and his philosophy is actually a concoction. So Harihara Ghosh and Nyayaratna, who's a logician and a caste Brahmin, and they somehow decide to go and try to defeat the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as represented by Paramahamsa Babaji, Vaishnav Das Babaji, and these other Babajis who we've been following that live in the kunjas of the forest bowers of Gojrin Dweep. And we've been following their dialogue, and the Vaishnav is represented by Vaishnav Das Babaji, as presented through the Vedas and other things that the Jiva Dharma, the Nitya Dharma living entity, is to serve Krishna. And that's been established from the very beginning of time. And that all great Brahmins and all great spiritualists from time immemorial have had that philosophy. And he's preached this very, very strongly. And then Nyayaratna said, but how come the high-class Brahmins are not taking to this, although many are? And he said, first of all, Vaishnav Das Babaji said the high-class Brahmins are taking to it. And, you know, the Brahmins you're talking about are actually the ones that just take to this, you know, out of prestige. So in this way, the dialogue is going on that Vaishnav Das Babaji just keeps on countering his arguments. You know, about you know, why the learned people don't take the kirtan. And he said, and Vaishnav Das, if you understand what a pandit is, they actually do. But the present pandits just debate over inconsequential matters. They never discuss the ultimate reality of the knowledge of the jiva's relationship with the absolute truth or the method of attaining that goal. And then what about, what about the high class, you know, almost all Brahmins, he said, are opposed to Vaishnav Dharma. And then Vaishnav Das gives the whole history of the great Vaishnavas that were Brahmins, from the four Sampradayas, Vaishnava Sampradayas, to Nityananda, to Advaita. And that the Brahmin families that are inimical to this is because they have degraded family lineage, or they're not educated properly, or they have undesirable association. And you can't actually even say they're Brahmins. And in Kali Yuga, it's very rare to be a Brahmin anyway. And then Nayanaratna is concerned why they're low-class people. And he said because, you know, low-class people, that in the Dvanashram system, especially how it became vitiated, they considered themselves very downtrodden. And people who are downtrodden are appreciative of what they get, and they can experience love and mercy. It's so conducive to devotional service, where people who have wealth and high birth, it's hard for them to become humble, actually. So now Nayanaratna says, okay, let's get down to what about Shankaracharya? Why don't you respect him? And Vaishnav Das says, well, why do you say that? We do respect him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu honored him by addressing him as Acharya. We consider him an incarnation of Lord Shiva. We only reject his Mayavad doctrine, because it's actually covered Buddhism. And the Vedas don't actually support that. On Krishna's order, Vaishnav Das explains, Shankaracharya distorted the meaning of the Vedas, the Vedanta, the Gita, and broadcast a false doctrine of impersonalism, known as Advaitavad, to convert those people who already had an inimical nature. So there's no fault, and Shankaracharya shouldn't be condemned, as Buddha shouldn't be condemned. Buddha is an avatar, and he preached a doctrine that opposed. But they don't condemn him because he had a purpose in doing that. And God, Ishvara, and Shiva, Mahadev, Shiva cannot be quality of cannot possibly be guilty of injustice. You blame them, you're ignorant. Sometimes we can't understand their activities, but intelligent people shouldn't think, it should not have been done. I could have done better. I see that in terms of Prabhupada. Why he did this, why that? I could have done better. But somehow or other, look at the potency of Prabhupada. It's just mind-blowing what he's done and continues to do. See, Vaishnav Das explains, Ishvara, God, directs the jivas, and he knows the necessity of why he binds them in illusion with different doctrines, even Buddhism and Mayavad. And we don't have the understanding of his purpose for creating the jivas and destroying their forms at the time of the cosmic manifestation. This is his lila. And those who are inherently devoted to Sri Hari experience great delight in hearing his pastimes, and they don't like to engage in intellectual debates about these matters of why God did this, why God did that. Dainaratha, that is all right, but why do you say that Mayavadi doctrine is opposed to the Vedas? Vedanta and the Gita, Vaishnava. If you carefully examine the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra, kindly tell me which mantras and sutras support the doctrine of Mayavada. And if you do, I'll explain the true meaning of these statements to prove that they do not support Mayavada. Some Vedic mantras may appear to contain a faint trace of Mayavada, but if one examines the mantras that come before and after that, their interpretation will be essentially displayed. So even if there's something that appears to be Advaita Vada, if you study it carefully and understand the context in which those mantras are spoken, they don't actually say what you think they say. And this is just a basic principle of understanding anything, that you have to understand it in context. You have to understand it in context. That's the way you understand anything. Nayanaratna. I have not studied the Upanishads, the Vedanta Sutra. I know Nyaya, and I'm ready to discuss on any topic through logic. Through logic, I can turn a clay pot into a piece of cloth and a piece of cloth into a clay pot. Gita, I haven't read. I read a little bit, but I've not studied it deeply, so I can't speak more on that point. Instead, let me ask you one more question on another topic. You are a learned scholar, so why don't you have faith in the remnants of food offered to the Devas and Devis, although they have great faith, though they have great faith in Vishnu Prasad. So why do they not honor the demigod Prasad? I'll briefly explain this point. I'm going to have to go sometimes because of people coming and. And what he explains is Vaishnavas don't disrespect the Prasad of the demigods, but when you approach them in an impersonal way, not in their connection to Vishnu, they don't actually accept that prasad. So it's not any type of prasad. And then he's going to go on to explain that when you worship them as devotees, they can be offered prasad, as you can offer prasad to your guru. But still, when it comes to bhakti and comes to a particular path, there's a certain loyalty. And therefore one only takes prasadam that's directly offered to Vishnu. Anyway, we'll stop here. I have time maybe for one question and then see which friends are listening. Anybody have any questions? Could someone please say hello? I know we always have this problem with muting and unmuting. And
Hare Krishna Maharaj, we're here.
Someone say hello, let me know that
Jai Maharaj, Hare Krishna.
People are still on or listening.
Here. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Anybody like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, Radhe Radhe.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
An email, because my thing is not working here also. And let me know if you were able to hear the class. Okay?